You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. You know, it's a big meal of headlines this week. Food is a newsmaker. From tomato salmonella outbreaks, beef riots in South Korea, the price of corn up 51% this year, food riots in Haiti, earlier in Egypt, inflation in food and commodities all over the globe, an expected 5% jump in U.S. food prices, highest since 1990, oil prices spiking, water shortages, rationing of rice, 33 countries at risk of social unrest because of food, all because of food. Paul Roberts, author of The End of Food, writer, journalist, are we reaching some sort of critical point here?
Well, it certainly feels like the world is ending, you know, in terms of food. It's like, you know, every time you turn on the TV or look at the newspaper, more bad news about food. And I think, you know, we've got a sort of a perfect storm of events going on here. We've got some natural disasters. You got drought. We've got wet spring keeping farmers from planting. We've also got some bad policy going on. We've got biofuels sucking up a lot of grain, taking it out of the food market, putting it into fuel markets. We've got China, you know, a lot of people getting richer, eating meat. And then we've got, you know, safety concerns. We've got a food system that seems to be letting bugs in. So,
well, let's talk for a minute. We look at the slices of this, you know, virtually every morning. Adora and I are talking about, you know, some sort of slice of this. But your book is really all about trying to take it from a macro view and sort of swallow, if I can say that, the real big dynamics that are pushing food surplus, food scarcity, food sort of environmental safety problems. How do you take this on in the way that you've done it? And you've got a provocative title, certainly, The End of Food.
Well, I mean, clearly we have a system that we've designed, sort of put together over the last century, and the idea was to sort of produce as much food as possible, lowest cost, you know, maximum convenience and variety. And it, you know, was working fairly well for most of the last century. And then in the last, say, decade, we start to see some signs that it's overheating, and that some of the sort of concepts may have been flawed. You know, basically we're trying to make food like any other consumer product, you know, TV or car. We want to produce it, you know, maximum number of units coming out to lower the cost, and we want to be able to distribute it rapidly. And that works great, you know, for an inanimate object like a TV set. It doesn't work so well for food is what we're discovering.
Why not? And are we talking about just the U.S. market, or are you talking about globally?
Well, it begins in the U.S. market. We sort of invent the model. It goes global. And why not? I mean, it's if you want to build cars, then you'd like what you want to do is centralize your production in huge factories to lower your per unit cost. You want to be able to source your raw materials from whichever supplier is selling it the cheapest that day. You want to be able to start and stop your assembly line, switch from SUVs to pickup trucks, depending on the market. And then you want to take the finished product and distribute it as rapidly as possible. Works great for trucks and TV sets. Doesn't work so great for food. With food, if you try all that, which we do, say in the meat business or produce, as soon as a problem enters the system, a pathogen, for example, you may have, say, spinach or hamburger in a consumer's home and in their stomach before health officials even know there was an outbreak.
So centralized food production means centralized pest production, centralized environmental contaminant production. When you look at the New York Times yesterday, the headline, the picture on the front, you saw this, Adora, with the millions of people in the street freaked out about American beef causing perhaps the South Korean government to fall. What do you think when you see that picture?
Well, two things. I think that food is a flashpoint. You know, whether you don't have enough of it and you're rioting because you're hungry, or whether you feel that your government is, you know, sacrificing your food safety in order to, you know, have a trade deal with the United States. I mean, the actual likelihood that we're going to have mad cow, be afflicted by mad cow, is very slight. But I think what's represented there is frustration by a population that their government's, you know, putting trade policy above public safety.
And when you talk about pathogens going through the system very quickly before they can get caught, is that just a question of setting up the safety guards, or what is the alternative?
Well, the FDA is now struggling with that very question. You know, they've just announced a $275 million initiative where they're going to try to prevent the outbreaks that are now causing so much trouble in the tomato market. And the problem there is that, yes, they can increase the number of inspectors, they can improve the standards that the companies use, but until they fix the underlying system, which is this sort of, you know, mass production, low cost, rapid distribution, these problems are going to keep coming back. You know, you can put more inspectors there, but if you're, you know, basically trying to mix ever larger batches of hamburger and distribute them to ever more, you know, consumers, you're going to have the, you know, risk of pathogen outbreak.
Let's shift to the question of supply for just a moment and maybe talk about solutions if we have time. In 2006, 800 million people on the planet were hungry, but a billion were overweight. Seems like the people who aren't hungry are winning. Is that a good view of the system or not?
Well, I mean, up until recently, you know, people described food insecurity or hunger as a distribution problem. We had plenty of calories. We just didn't have the system in place to get the calories to those who needed them. Now we've still got those distribution problems. We still have political instability, bad roads in developing nations. But on top of that, we have some scarcity. We have, you know, grain reserves that have been taken down by a number of events. We began by talking about, you know, ethanol droughts. So we have a true scarcity problem, which we haven't faced for about a half century.
And this is really sort of, for a half century, there hasn't been scarcity problems.
Not globally. We've always hunger has been a regional problem. It's been, you know, specific to say sub-Saharan Africa or India, and the rest of the world's been able to pitch in. We haven't seen global grain reserves this low for quite some time, and now people are saying, okay, now is that just a temporary thing? Is that just because we had the drought? Is the market going to, in other words, will the market come in and fix this, or is this a longer-term problem?
And you know, the parallel to oil is actually a little chilling. I mean, when the oil prices spike, who becomes the enemy? The producers, the companies and the producers of oil, the OPEC nations, for instance. In this particular case, if food becomes scarce, the centralized producers like the United States and other big agricultural producers become the enemy, and we're seeing that in South Korea.
Well, 2 points. First of all, you know, there are alternatives for oil. There's no alternative for food. Okay, and the second thing is, this is a very energy-intensive food system. You know, we all know that, you know, it takes a lot of oil to grow food and distribute it. But keep in mind, this system was designed for oil at $15 a barrel. Really, this was the
system. This food system?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
This was a system designed in the 70s and 80s. Really, the system we have now really emerged in the 70s and 80s when oil was dirt cheap. And that's why we had global, that's why we had, you know, flying in, you know, produce from Chile. That's why we can ship grain all around the world. We're still using that system.
Wow.
We modified it barely, but now we're facing oil that's nearly 10 times that price.
It's a new change. Well, we're going to get the headlines here in a minute. Paul, you'll come back. You're on a book tour right now, but you'll come back.
I'd be glad to.
Paul Roberts, the author of The End of Food and also the book The End of Oil, talking about commodities and system changes in a very macro crisis called the food scarcity globally. But now we have headlines from Femi Oke. Okay.
Hello there. Just coming up to 29 minutes past the hour. Italians.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.